Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Small Business Digest Radio. My name is Don Mazzella, and I am your host for a program devoted to identifying strategies and suggestions to help small business managers increase profits, add sales, better manage cash flow, improve employee management, and streamline operations. Our guests are other entrepreneurs and experts offering their solutions to the problems and opportunities facing small business leaders. Our aim in each program is to provide one or two thought-provoking ideas or suggestions. So follow us on Twitter at #2SBDigest or at our website at www.smallbusinessdigest.net.
You know, I read a report once that 22% of all American households had a cat litter box. It surprised me then. Then I went to a show late last year, and I found a man who has invented a new type of cat litter box. So I said to him, well, you have a big marketplace, but you're a small company. And I invited him on the program. And I now invite Glenn Lawton to come on in and first tell us a little bit about himself before we get into how does an entrepreneur from Pennsylvania crack the cat litter box market. Glenn, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Don.
Well, first, Glenn, we always ask our guests to say a little bit about themselves personally, how they got to where they are now.
Okay. Let's just say that ever since I was a kid, we've always had a cat, at least one, you know, for many years. And then over the years, I've ended up, you know, moved away from home, still had a, you know, a cat. And then one day I was dealing with the litter box routine.
Glenn, I'm going to interrupt you. Tell us about yourself personally. What's your background?
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, okay.
We'll get
originally
into the
born
other topic in a minute.
Okay, thanks. Originally born in Providence, Rhode Island, and moved to Pennsylvania in the late 60s. Ended up going to technical school, so I'm basically, you know, good with my hands and, you know, good problem-solving skills. You know, oldest of four kids, and recently married about 3-4 years ago, and now living in southeastern Pennsylvania.
Okay. What do you do when you're not out there peddling your cat boxes?
Oh, let's see. I collect rare currency. I work on my own vehicles. Work on other people's vehicles. Save some money that way. You know, have a pretty good sized toolbox out in the garage, and I like to tinker with things, especially if it goes fast and it gets me from one point to another point.
Okay, so. As you started to say, you always had a cat. So go from there.
Yes. Again, I've always had my family. We've always had a cat. And then once I got out on my own, I've always had cats again. And about 20 years ago, the last cat that I had, I was dealing with the litter box, and I figured, you know, there was new stuff on the market. I tried it. I really didn't like it, and I just kind of visualized in my head, looking at the scooping mechanism and then thinking that it needed to be modified to be bigger to cover the whole litter box. And then just an image popped in my head, and I, you know, had somebody draw it up, and I did a patent search. Turns out it did not exist, and I went from there. So I acquired the patent, the trademark, did a little bit of advertising, and then found that it really wasn't going to do me much good unless I actually had a product to sell people. So I actually got molds made, and now, you know, since the molds have been made, and I am in production, probably sold, you know, quite a few hundred of these things, and seems that everybody is extremely happy with this item. And I would just like to, you know, talk about, you know, the patent process and the trademark process. And
first, tell us, what's so different about your cat litter box?
Oh, okay. The reason mine is unique is because compared to all the other litter boxes on the market, this one does not have any of the disadvantages that it seems that all the other ones seem to have. Number one, it's inexpensive.
I keep interrupting you only to kind of focus the conversation.
Okay.
Describe how your box works, which when I saw it, I thought was clever. But the audience hasn't had the benefit of your box or anything.
Oh, okay. I understand what you're driving at. Okay. Basically, all cats are used to using a plain litter box. Basically, with mine, it comes with two litter pans and a screen section. Just simply fill the first one litter pan with any amount, the amount of litter you feel is necessary. And then when it comes time to clean the litter box out, simply place the screen section over the whole pan and then take the second litter pan, flip it over and clamshell all three pieces together. And then while they're all together and sealed, just simply flip it over once and allow the good litter to fall through the screen and all the waste remains above the screen. And then simply just take it apart and that's it.
Simple solution to an age-old problem.
Exactly. There's no liners. There's no slots to clog up. You don't have to. You don't even have to refill the first pan. It perfectly reciprocates in one motion.
Oh well, but the cats are fussy people. Don't you have to replace the litter at some point?
Eventually, with any system, you're going to have to add a little bit of litter as it diminishes, you know, through use.
Okay, so you came up with this idea, which I know works because I've seen it work. I don't have a cat at this time. So now you went out. You say you developed this over 20 years ago, but it took you time to figure out what to do in order to make turn this into an enterprise. Am I right?
Yeah, it's still pretty much in I've got the supply created, but unfortunately, there went most of my money, and I really haven't been able to create the demand that I would have liked to have seen. That's pretty much where I'm at right now.
So right now you don't have the demand. So
that's correct.
You don't have
I don't
the
have
money.
No, unfortunately, these are the pitfalls that I found.
Oh, okay. Well, let's go into this a little bit and let's talk about it. I saw you at an event where people are brought, entrepreneurs like you are brought to New York, and the press is invited to mingle with you. You obviously spent money there. How did that go?
Well, we were supposed to, I was actually slated with this company to go to Las Vegas for a very large pet convention or an expo out there, but somehow or another, it ended up being canceled. through them, and then they offered me the opportunity to come to New York and, you know, present what I had there. And that's where I ran into you. I would have preferred to be, have gone to the pet show out in Las Vegas, because this would have been a perfect venue to, you know, show that to people that were looking in that particular industry. Unfortunately, it didn't turn out that way.
Well, there is a pet supply show. Are you talking about the National Pet Supply Show? Or are you talking about a different one?
I think it's a different one. The name that you had mentioned is not the name of the show that was canceled in Las Vegas.
Right. So what you ended up with was me and about 50 other press people.
Correct.
So now, you're sitting here now, you've sold a couple of hundred units. What are you thinking of doing?
I'm really out of options. I would have liked to have found somebody to, you know, partner up with me or buy me out that actually does have advertising and marketing experience. I found out the hard way that I am not that person.
Well, that's the first good thing that happened. You recognize what you yourself are not good at.
Right.
Have you thought of doing one of these fundraising things? Have you thought of that?
I would not even know how to begin to try to do something like that.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit. And the number to call in is 646-929-2337. If you have any ideas for Glenn or want to talk about it. Again, the number is 646-929-2337. But let's examine. By the way, you're not in any different position than a lot of other people that I've interviewed or talked with or even had on this show. So we're certainly not the Shark Tank.
No.
We don't have, but we do have a couple of financiers and venture capitalists that listen in occasionally. I've known that. But now you've got a patent, you've got the molds, you've got a product which if I didn't think was good, you would not be on this program.
Thank you.
I thought you took a good shot on that in New York. What are the alternatives for you? Do you do this full time?
Oh no, there's no way I could afford to do this full time. Even if I had right now working at a full time job, you know, and still just paying my regular bills and stuff like that. I can't afford, number one, the money, and number two, I can't afford the time and the travel. And again, I really don't know or have the experience in marketing or advertising. And I have spent money with other companies that have promised me, you know, results, but unfortunately, they were more interested in just taking my money up front, and that was the end of it. So it never really worked.
Yeah, that is the unfortunate part of facing small businesses, and people like yourself who've come up with great ideas, is that there are companies out there that, in my view, prey on individuals.
Exactly, predatory.
That would be the word I would use.
Yep.
I'm glad you use it. I can't, but you can.
Hello.
Oh, I'm really sorry about. Yes, I'm really sorry about that, but I got cut off. Somebody came into my line. So we also have another guest joining us from 202. Who's on the call?
This is Jane Marie Mulvey.
How are you, Jean Marie?
Good. How are you?
Fine.
Yeah.
We just had a technical glitch that we hoped was fixed. I'm just finishing up. Be patient with me 2 or 3 minutes while I finish up our interrupted interview with Glenn Lawton, who's got what I consider a unique cat litter box that is unfortunately at the point where he's trying to figure out what to do. Glenn, how can people reach you? And do you have a website?
I do.
What's your website?
The website is www.onceoverlitterbox.com.
Say that one again.
www.onceoverlitterbox, all one word, .com.
Well, Glenn, we've put out an appeal. And we're going to follow up with a story on Small Business Digest about you. And
Okay. We're
going to see if we can give you a hand in finding someone that can help you market a product that I think is fairly unique.
Thank you so much, and I appreciate, you know, any effort that anybody would be willing to give me.
Well, I do know, having seen your product, that it really is a terrific product. So,
thank you.
Good luck to you, and I'll have one of my editors contact you next week.
Thank you so much, Don.
Have a good night.
You too. Thank you.
Jane Marie, are you there?
I am here. Hello, Don. How are you?
Well, I'm fine. We just had an interesting guest on, and now we're going to have an even more interesting guest than you. You were a senior congressional health economist during the ACA's the Affordable Care Act, known here and there as the Obamacare formation, and later your chief economist at the Small Business Administration. So we're really honored to have you on the program.
Well, thank you.
Well, but before we do anything else, I said a little bit about your background, but tell us a little bit more about yourself personally and professionally.
Well, I worked at the Congressional Research Service when Congress was enacting and implementing the Affordable Care Act, and I was there about 8 years. And during that time, I learned that there was a lot of confusion about the Affordable Care Act. And so later I went as chief economist at SBA, and I learned there was more confusion. So I left my government job, and I decided to write this book, Health Reform, What Small Businesses Need to Know Now, because I discovered there was a large gap in timely and unbiased information, and that large companies can pay consultants to help them, but small companies really are focused on performance. They need less costly alternatives. So I think this book will help them do that.
Okay. Let me give you an interesting statistic that came across my desk today. There's still 17% of the American public is still not covered by a health care program policy, and that they said the main reasons for it were a lack of understanding, disagreement with the act, or they couldn't afford it. I found that an interesting statistic, given that the ACA was supposed to eliminate uninsured Americans. But having said that, and what if, first, what are, how do you feel? And this is somewhat of a loaded question. Do you feel that the act is fulfilling what its sponsors intended?
Well, it was intended to expand coverage to the uninsured, and it does have, 40% of the uninsured work for businesses with less than 50 employees, and 15% of the uninsured are self-employed. So it was targeted to those categories. However, the things it did to help that, the small business tax credit really doesn't do what it needs to do. The premium credits, we all know about the first year of the open enrollment, and the exchanges had problems. The latest in November, the exchanges have been more successful, which is good, but people still don't know what they have to do, when they have to do it, and by when. So there is still a lot of confusion. And if the uninsured that were uninsured last year, they will pay a penalty this year for not having insurance. And I think that's going to wake people up. And unfortunately, by the time they figure this out, it'll be tax time, and it'll be way past the February 15th deadline when they can enroll in the exchanges.
Yes. H&R Block had an open house on Thursday, and I think they were surprised by the results of it. I'm waiting anxiously for their comments on what people said. But having said that, the floor is now yours. What are your key points that a small business should take away from your book and from how you from your experience?
Well, I think the issue is that the small businesses are confused, and that after many delays in the implementation of the Affordable Care Act, 2015 is a key year for when a lot of these penalties will be imposed. And not only are there penalties this year on certain employers, there are also new IRS reporting requirements and new insurance coverage mandates. But small businesses don't know what to do, when to do it, and the answer to their questions are buried in thousands of pages of regulations. So I think the big thing small businesses have to do is first figure out their firm size, because how big they are in terms of how many workers they have will determine what provisions affect them. But unfortunately, determining firm size is actually difficult, because they define full-time as 30 hours a week. So you have to figure out who's your full-time employees based on 30 hours, which is not typical, and you have to treat seasonal workers differently. You have to treat certain categories, like if you have adjunct faculty, airline pilots. It's very, very confusing. So I explain in my book how to do all these what's called a full-time equivalent calculation. So the good news is the firms with less than 50 full-time equivalents are not liable for any penalties this year. They do have to make sure they tell their workers about exchanges and what's there in terms of premium credits. And the Department of Labor has provided what's called model notices for them to do that. And also, if anybody's insured this year, they really should start looking at coverage in the exchange by February 15th.
Well, everything is before February 15th. That's insured. They have about a month to really make the decisions. Am I hearing you correctly?
Correctly. If they were uninsured last year, they're going to pay a penalty if they were uninsured for more than 3 months and they don't receive an exemption. I mean, there are exemptions for many, many different things. If you're low income, you get an exemption. There's religious exemptions. And that's what H&R Block is doing. They're going to help uninsured people go through and figure out if they are eligible for an exemption. But if you're not eligible for an exemption, you need to start looking at insurance right away, because once you do your taxes and figure out you're going to pay a penalty, it'll be too late.
Well, let me. I saw another statistic yesterday that the average small business pays $9,500 per employee for their health care insurance, and that the rate in which the and that the employee this this past year and this coming into this coming year is going to pay about a third of that. An employer will then have about a $6,000. Wouldn't it be smarter for the employer just to pay the $3,000 fine and leave their workers bereft of anything?
For the employer to providing coverage, I mean, that is the issue that administratively it's going to be, I mean, the premiums are going to go up. Another issue that people don't realize, employers with 50 to 100 employees, they will pay a penalty next year if they don't provide insurance, but the insurance they provide has to meet stricter standards than larger employers with 100 or more employees. So it's kind of a competitive disadvantage to them. And they will find it's probably better to pay, you know, the $2,000 per full-time worker than to provide the insurance.
Well, doesn't that defeat the purpose of Obamacare?
Unfortunately, it does. I mean, the reason for what was called the employer shared responsibility payment was to keep employers in the game, to give them some financial incentive. But, you know, in some ways it's been set low. So some employers, if their costs go up, they will decide to pay the penalty instead. The other issue is just in terms of administratively, all employers subject to the penalty, 50 and over, will have to tell the IRS what their insurance coverage is for each and every worker monthly. And like your W-2 form, they'll have to tell the IRS, this is what I'm giving each and every worker monthly, the nature of the coverage, whether it's affordable, whether it meets all these other criteria, and that will be burdensome. And that's how IRS is going to tell if people have coverage. I'm sorry.
No. Please repeat that. I went over your views. What did you just say? Because I think it's
well,
important.
The reason the IRS is asking for this from both the insurers and the employers is because they're the ones who have to track who has coverage and from where. And so every year when people fill out their tax returns, they have to show they have coverage, and their employers will have to show them evidence of that through these forms, and their insurer will have to show them evidence. So it's a lot more paperwork.
Yes. Many small businesses feel they're already overburdened with paperwork from government agencies. Your book explains all of these things, but do you also offer some ways of mitigating these requirements?
Well, I do suggest some things actually more for Congress, basically to change the definition of full-time to 40 hours instead of 30 hours, which there's a bill in Congress right now, H.R. 30, that was passed by the House of Representatives to do that, and the Senate will take up something called S to consider it, and that will help a lot in terms of some of these requirements. But more importantly, I recommend that you eliminate the penalty for employers with 50 to 99 employees because they are going to be subject to stricter standards and all these administrative burdens, and because they are smaller, it just will become too costly for them. And third, I suggest expanding what's called the small business tax credit for the very small employers under 10 to go up to 25 employees and to expand the wage limit for that.
Well,
so we'll see what happens.
You talk.
No, that's all right. You were going to say something about John Goodman?
Yes. In an op-ed piece for the Wall Street Journal, I think two or three days ago, said that actually Obamacare has affected, more adversely affects the lowest paid employees because in many cases, particularly in the restaurant and other service industries, the employers are either eliminating the health care and taking the penalty, or giving them policy that may comply or sending them to the exchanges. In either case, the employee could be required to spend up to 20% of their take-home on affordable programs. Have you looked at that? Have any thoughts on that?
Well, that's a very good point, because at the minimum wage and the very low-income workers, it is a high share of their wage. And the Affordable Care Act actually did expand Medicaid to get to the low-wage worker. The problem is many states did not expand Medicaid. It was the Supreme Court found out you can only voluntarily do it. So in those states that didn't expand Medicaid, the employers would the individuals have to go into the exchange, and it would trigger a penalty. In the states that expand Medicaid, that does not trigger a penalty. So those employers do not pay a penalty just because their workers go into the Medicaid. So that's a real problem. For example, Virginia is considering this. If they don't expand Medicaid, the employers in those states could pay a higher penalty.
So, but in any case, somewhere along the line, somebody's going to have to spend more money in order to make the Obamacare work.
Yes.
That's a contentious question, but that's what it seems like to me. I've looked at this. We have another a healthcare website, and we've been looking at this from both the consumer angle and a small business angle. And are there any winners in Obamacare?
I do think, it has covered the uninsured. I think the latest number is 8 to 9 million of uninsured are covered. So it has been good for people, especially with pre-existing conditions. So there are winners. It's just what is the cost in the long run? Is it fair to mandate businesses to cover them?
Well, our next guest, who just came online, is Rick Lundquist, and he's co-author of the book "The End of Employer-Provided Healthcare Insurance." So, I wonder if you, first off, what is the name of your book?
The name of my book is "Health Reform: What Small Businesses Need to Know Now." And if you go to my website, MulveyHealth.com. It's there. It's also on Amazon under J. Marie Mulvey.
Okay, but spell out Mulvey.com, please, for our audience.
www.mulvey, M-U-L, V like victory, E-Y, health, health.com.
Well, I wish I had gotten the book before you came on the program, because it sounds like it would be very interesting. Would you want to stay on and listen in and perhaps join in with Rick?
Sure, I'll listen in, and I'll send you a copy of my book.
Okay, but our next guest is Rick Lundquist. He's co-author of The End of Employer-Provided Health Insurance. Rick, welcome to the program.
Hi, Don. Thanks for having me.
Well, we've just been talking with Jane Marie Mulvey, Dr. Jane Marie Mulvey. She's talking about the few helped in the formation of the ACA Act, also known by many as Obamacare. And then someone sent me a email about you this morning, and I just thought it would be a great opportunity because to hear your thoughts. But first, Rick, we always ask our guests to tell a little bit about themselves personally.
Sure. So I am a young CEO of an emerging tech company called Zane Benefits. I actually took the company over in 2007 the age of 22, and Zane Benefits helps small businesses reimburse employees for their individual health insurance costs. It's something I'm very passionate about. I actually just, as you mentioned, co-authored a book on the topic, and love talking about it and love helping small businesses.
Well, Jane Marie has, or Dr. Mulvey, I don't want to be too familiar, just enlightened me on some things I didn't know. But why do you think it's the end of the employer-provided health insurance?
Well, it's funny. It's not like this is something that's happening sort of overnight. In the book, we discuss this paradigm shift, from employer health insurance to individually purchased or consumer purchased health insurance. And what we're talking about here is something that's been happening since the early 2000s. Since 1999, in the book, we document this, the average cost for employer health insurance has increased almost 400%. And that's not the whole story. Every year, the costs have been shifted to workers in the form of higher copays, higher coinsurance, and even higher premium contributions. And so the next step for this unsustainable model is for employers to terminate their health plans.
Well, I mentioned earlier a study that came across my desk just today that the cost of to an average business of healthcare insurance is $9,500, of which employees are paying about $3,500. But that contrasts just 3 years ago, when the $35 was about a third of it, and just a few years ago it was less than 15% for employer contribution. But I have to add another statistic which blew my mind in this survey, which said that the average cost of public employees was $11,800, and they paid less than 20% towards the cost. And I thought that was a striking statistic. Any comments?
Absolutely. So it's likely due to the public program. A lot of employees there really value their health benefits, and so that's a big part of their compensation. And so when you compare small business rates or business rates on the private sector with public rates, it's going to be different. But primarily because the deductibles are going to be much lower and the coverage is going to be better. And so what we're suggesting in the book is, now that coverage has gotten so bad for small businesses and so expensive on a group basis, is instead let's get everyone on individual health insurance policies, all the employees, and give them the money to go buy it. And what we found based on our research is that those individual plans actually cost 20 to 60% less for comparable coverage.
Well, we've seen that as well. But yet, do you think that helps the acceptance of the ACA Act, or puts another burden against it?
So my view on that subject is this trend was happening before Obamacare. And when you really look at what Obamacare does, its major provisions is it really improves the individual health insurance market. It really, what it does is it sets minimum standards that every health insurance company must cover. And it really sets the stage for the mass adoption of individual health insurance. People would be a lot happier if, prior to Obamacare being passed, businesses canceled their coverage and they had to go to an underwritten, medically underwritten marketplace where they might be denied coverage. And with Obamacare, when you lose your health insurance through your work, you can now go immediately and buy guaranteed issue health insurance at a lower cost.
Jane Marie, could we have your thoughts on what Rick is saying?
It is true that employers are moving towards that. I guess under Obamacare or ACA, the one issue is the penalty. Employers with 50 or more would pay a penalty if they dropped their coverage. And also, if they gave them more money to buy an individual policy, they would be taxed on those wages, whereas health insurance is not taxed.
Well, Rick, do you think this is a good thing or a bad thing to go to an individual coverage marketplace?
So I'm actually believe wholeheartedly that the employer model is just a terrible model to begin with. and this is a big topic of part one of the book, and it's you know 10 reasons why group health insurance is bad for you, your family, and your company. And the real problem with employer-based health insurance is that you have a consumer product, health insurance, which is just like you know your car insurance, being picked for and chosen for you and even paid for by someone that isn't you. So you end up with this, you know, especially in the small business space, you've got, you know, 20 people working at a company and they're getting a one size does not fit all health insurance plan. And so what we think works much better is let those employees go buy an individual health insurance plan based on their family's needs and simply give those employees the money to purchase it. And in the book, we actually provide a way to do that so that it's tax-free to the business and tax-free to the employees.
To a health reimbursement account? Is that how you do
it's
it?
It's actually through health something called a health reimbursement plan.
Yeah, okay. But they'll still pay a penalty.
Pardon me?
The employers will still pay a penalty.
Well, only if they have greater than 50 employees. So what we do is we divide sort of the – listen, before any employer makes this transition, the first thing they always do is they do a cost analysis. So you know, in part three of the book, we provide a step-by-step analysis that an employer can complete, and it sort of breaks off into two scenarios. One for companies with less than 50 employees in which this penalty is irrelevant, which is really the companies that Zane Benefits is focused on helping. And then, you know, companies with more than 50 employees who are going to have to pay that penalty. But we've actually found, you know, when we look at these numbers, is that the penalty, that $2,000 per year penalty, even when you factor that into the cost of canceling health insurance and giving employees money to buy their own individual policies, the companies still save substantial amounts of money, and it's actually a better financial decision for the business and the employees.
And so even if you give them money, the after-tax cost is better for the employee?
So
because you have to
I'm
give them
sure
less money because you pay a penalty. Right now, under current law, employer-provided health care benefits are tax-deductible. Employers don't pay that. Employees don't have to bear that cost in their taxes. So if you give them wages, they have to pay tax on those wages.
Exactly. So we actually provide two ways to switch to individual health insurance in the book. One is the what you're suggesting, simply giving a taxable stipend or a wage increase. The other is to set up a compliant reimbursement plan under the tax code so that the contributions or reimbursements for the individual premiums are provided tax-free.
Okay. So they have more contributions, but they still have to pay a penalty, the employers, over 50.
Only if they have over 50 employees.
50.
But again, yeah, exactly. So small businesses completely exempt from the penalty. Larger businesses with 50 or more employees, they pay the penalty, but they go, you know what, that's better because now my employees get access to a topic we haven't yet covered yet, which is the premium tax credits.
Okay.
What do you mean by compliant? A compliant program. I didn't understand that.
So in order for you to reimburse employees tax-free, and this is a big concept in the book, and it's a controversial topic in the marketplace right now, you have to be sure that you follow the compliance rules of both the tax code and the Obamacare rules. And so you have to take extra care when you're giving employees money for health insurance on a pre-tax basis.
And isn't the other issue the smaller group plans, you have to have a stricter insurance standards under ACA?
So if a small business offers health insurance and it's considered group health insurance, that's one standard. The arrangement under which you would provide a defined contribution is actually a self-funded arrangement. It is exempt from most of the small group requirements.
But the policies that they purchase is the individual market, which is stricter now.
Yes, and that's actually a benefit because the individual policies now meet the minimum standards that employers' plans have been accustomed to. So you truly have an apples-to-apples comparison for the employees.
But do they raise premiums overall because of the stricter standards?
Premiums overall in the individual market?
Yes. Well, you know, so, relative to what they would have been.
Yeah, so that's one of the – so one of the – anyone who had an individual plan prior to Obamacare, they probably saw a large rate increase because they were on a medically underwritten plan. So you know, yes, the costs compared to where they were before Obamacare are higher, but still, when you compare them to the existing employer plan costs, and we do a state-by-state analysis in the book, it's 20 to 60% less, and that's before you apply the premium tax credits.
Okay.
Well, I'm sure learning a lot from you two experts. And again, Jane Marie, introduce yourself and your book.
Yes, thank you. I'm glad talking to you, and my book was called Health Reform, What Small Businesses Need to Know Now.
Okay. And Rick, please introduce yourself and where you could get your book.
Sure. So, again, it's Rick Lindquist. I'm the CEO of Zane Benefits. We help businesses reimburse employees for individual health insurance, and the book is available via all major retailers. And for an easy link, go to Zane, Z-A-N-E, benefits.com/book.
Well, I'd like to continue a little. We have a few more minutes. I'm going to ask Jane Marie. I always like to put a doctor in front of it, but Jane Marie is such a pretty name.
Well, thank you.
it is. Do you have any of what would be the two major advice that you'd give small business in this coming year vis-a-vis their health care?
Well, I think they have to learn what they have to do to comply with ACA. And as Rick said, I mean, they could go his route and just have them purchase coverage in the individual market. But before they do that, they have to figure out their firm size, which is complicating. And if they are over 50, they have to start reporting to the IRS what they're doing with their insurance. So even if they do provide allow their employees to provide insurance in the individual market, they're still going to have to tell the IRS what they're doing for each and every employee.
And that is somewhat burdensome. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be some software out there, but Rick, what two things would you tell our audience? 59% of our listeners are presidents and or owners. So what advice would you give them?
So I think, you know, if you're a small business owner, one of the number one challenges you face every year is your rising health benefits costs. And I think what the main point in the book is, and what we're promoting, the idea we're promoting at Zane Benefits is, get out of the insurance business. Instead, focus on your business and give employees money to go buy in their own individually purchased health insurance. And what you'll find is that's better for your business, it's better for your employees, and it's better for your family. And we put a lot of effort into the book to try to educate businesses and their employees on the concept so they can make this decision.
Well, Jane Marie, you worked on the Obamacare ACA Act. What two things do you think most need to be fixed in that act?
I think they have to fix the full-time definition of 30 hours and move it to 40 hours. And I think they should exclude the employers with 50 to 99 employees from the penalty.
Well, you shocked me when you said about how that particular group of companies really are getting hit harder than anybody else. That really surprised me.
Correct, because they will have stricter standards.
Well, why is that? Because of clerking the law or just somebody disliked them?
Well, there's new market reforms, and they will apply to businesses with up to 100 employees in 2016. So those small businesses will have to have the essential health benefits and all the stricter insurance standards if they have provide coverage.
Well, I'm learning. Rick, what do you think about health savings accounts and whether they fit into this picture, or are they on the way out?
They're a terrific product. In fact, I've had an HSA since I graduated college, and I love it. And so I'm very high on HSAs, but again, an HSA, just like health insurance, is a consumer product, and it's a choice that a consumer should be able to make. One of the gotchas with an HSA is you only can open an HSA if you buy an HSA-qualified plan. So one problem, you know, is that if you work for an employer that doesn't offer an HSA-qualified plan, you have to, you know, basically go buy your own health insurance in order to contribute to an HSA. And so that, you know, brings up the, you know, one of the benefits of the idea we promote in our book is that, you know, if you can pick your own individual policy, if you want an HSA-qualified plan, you can actually go pick one regardless of what the other your other coworkers decide to pick.
Jay Marie, what do you think about HSAs?
I think he's right. The point of HSAs is that the first, say, $1,000 of your deductible, you pay up front. So you think more about that coverage and what you're going to do. You're not going to go to the doctor just for a cold. And you can roll that money over year to year. And, in fact, when you get older, you can use it for long-term care. So it is a good way to encourage people not to overutilize health care.
Well, I have to tell you, for 7 years, our company, Information Strategies, did the White House conference on HSAs. So I'm a very big fan of HSAs, and I'm glad to hear you say it as well. Unfortunately, we get the feeling that the administration is not as high on HSAs as we would like them to be. Do you have any comment on that?
For me?
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead,
Jane. You were involved.
Well, I think the issue is the HSAs were a Republican idea, so I think there's concern that they would encourage some people to have higher out-of-pocket costs than they could afford. So that's one of the downfalls of it. But they don't include preventive services. So your preventive services do not have a deductible. So things like a mammogram for a woman or well baby care is not subject to the deductible, which is very good.
Yes, and I would add to that it's a Republican idea, and so the existing administration will have trouble supporting it. But you know, there's a new game in town right now, and if you look at most of the Republicans, you know, sort of templates on healthcare, there's not many that don't involve expanding HSAs. And one of the things that Republicans want to do is they want to allow HSAs to reimburse health insurance premiums. One of the big limitations of an HSA is that you can only use it for medical expenses, unless you're in special circumstances, either retired, unemployed. And so one really good idea is to let HSAs cover premiums. That way people could cover their premiums on an individual basis tax-free.
Again, we're coming up close to the end of our hour. Rick, your book and how people can reach you?
It's zanebenefits.com/book. It's available via all major retailers. It's called The End of Employer-Provided Health Insurance, Why It's Good for You and Your Company. And love hearing from people, so feel free to contact us via the website and give us feedback.
But how do you spell your company?
Z-A-N-E.
Okay.
Zane Benefits, Z-A-N-E, benefits.com, B-E-N-E-F-I-T-S.
And Jean Marie, you get the last word.
My book is available on mulveyhealth.com, M-U-L-V like victory, E-Y, health.com. And it's also available on Amazon. The name of the book is Health Reform, What Small Businesses Need to Know Now. Thank you.
And I hope both of you. Joining us, and Rick, especially that you're on such short notice.
No, thank you for the opportunity, and I look forward to following you and your show.
Thank you.
Have a nice day.
You too. Bye.
Thank you for listening tonight. All of our guests are invited because they offer actionable advice to our audience. They do not pay to join us, but rather demonstrate their capacity for helping our audience and profits. Thank you for listening, and we'll be here again next week with other experts to talk about ways to improve your profit picture. Remember, we're here every week at blogtalkradio.com/smallbusinessdigest. If you like what you heard today, tell others about our efforts. If you would like to be a guest or suggest topics for future hours, email me at info@smallbusinessdigest.net. That's info@smallbusinessdigest.net. We would also like to remind listeners that besides our radio efforts, Small Business Digest comes to you via the web, through our video channel, and in our magazine. You can subscribe for any or all of these by going to smallbusinessdigest.net. That's smallbusinessdigest.net. Thank you, and have a good day. Thank you for listening tonight. All of our guests